Founded in 1729, Arlington Street continues today as a gathering place for progressive people of faith in the greater Boston area and beyond. We are located at the corner of Arlington and Boylston Streets, across from the Public Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.
While working as a hospital chaplain early in the pandemic, I was asked to take the director position on an interim basis. I didn't want to. Okay, I can do it for a short amount of time, but that's it. But then when I was asked to apply for the position permanently, I decided it would be good experience to at least go through the interview process. My boss's boss interviewed me. She had one of the highest positions in the hospital and always presented very polished and measured. "Well, Allie," she said, "you have made quite a positive impact around here, so I really just have one question for you. My question is, how did you become Allie?" That was not the question that I expected. I was in my late 20s, and I bet all the people in college and high school and grad school who had ever prepared me for job interviews would suggest that I give a polished, measured response. But it wouldn't be honest, so I took a breath. "That's a surprising question," I said. "I think maybe you're asking about how I connect with my patients, their families, and our colleagues in the hardest situations. In those moments, I draw on a time in my life when everything fell apart and I was forced to cry out for help. Which is never easy, but it's hard when you don't believe that anything will help. It's more like a gasp and a gargle all at once. That period of darkness and desperation and hopelessness is something I return to when I see others in crisis. I remember the agony of not gently asking for help, but of desperately needing it and not feeling worthy of it. I remember the terror of not seeing how it could ever get better. I did get hired for the job, but you know who definitely wouldn't have hired me? President Donald Trump. For many reasons, but let's just talk about that interview question. President Trump's persona is built on never showing any vulnerability. Here are just a few quotes from President Trump. "I'd give myself an A+. We got more money, we got more brains, we got better houses, apartments, we got nicer boats. We are smarter than they are. I'm leading everybody, and we're doing great. I don't think I can do much better, right?" Author John Katz wrote, "Donald Trump is afraid of being vulnerable, and in needing to appear strong and right, he never gives himself the gift of being wrong and humble. And that is what connects us to people." What is vulnerability? Researcher Brené Brown is probably the most famous voice on the topic. She defines vulnerability as uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure. It's easier and more manageable when the problem is all about one person, but that is so rarely the case. President Trump might be the loudest resistor of vulnerability, but he is certainly not alone. And I worry that this resistance is growing. What does vulnerability look like? It can look a lot of different ways, but here are just a few ways that I see resisting vulnerability as impacting us. We are so afraid of being wrong or making mistakes that we never grow. We are so afraid of exposing ourselves, especially our wounds, that our wounds never get tended to fully. We are so afraid of rejection that we don't connect with each other. We are so afraid of rejection that we don't love fully. These are hard times. Vulnerability is one way to combat the atrocities around us. Vulnerability can be both a force to push against hate and a force to bring us back to each other. There is incredible value in vulnerability. When we are so afraid of being wrong or making mistakes, we don't grow. Vulnerability can help with this. When we are vulnerable, we risk being wrong to become better. Our beloved minister emerita, Reverend Kim Crawford Harvey, shared her 9 most important words with us many times. I'm sorry, I made a mistake, please forgive me. It sounds simple, but I don't see this modeled very much. When I ask, how are we going to respond to the hate said about our trans neighbors? Or what are we going to do for our neighbors who are in danger of losing their protected status? So often the response I hear is, we can't be political, or we have to be very careful. I'm grateful that in this community, we know that caring about other people is not political. And I believe in carefulness, but not saying anything for fear of saying the wrong thing is not careful. In fact, when we think of our most at-risk neighbors, not saying anything is abandonment, and it is detrimental for their well-being and for ours. Brené Brown, our vulnerability expert, referred to someone on social media as her spirit animal. Many people were upset. They wrote to say this post was disrespectful to and an appropriation of Indigenous cultures. How did Brown respond? She admitted that her initial reaction was to become defensive, but instead she publicly apologized, then thanked her followers for correcting her and promised to do better. She said, I keep engaging because for me, what shifted is a mindset of, I'm not here to be right, I am here to get it right. Do you refrain from speaking because you worry about making a mistake? Have you watched somebody around you misspeak? How did you respond? Were you dismissive? Is it possible to be kind in giving constructive feedback? When we are so afraid of exposing ourselves, especially our wounds never get tended to. Vulnerability can help with this. As a hospital chaplain, I see a lot of wounds, physical ones and emotional ones. When I share stories from my work from the pulpit, I change identifying details to protect my patients and their people, but I keep the essence. A patient that I'll call Avery was waiting for a heart transplant and was not doing well. Her family asked me to come say prayers for a successful surgery and a healthy organ. Avery wasn't making eye contact with me. I acknowledged how difficult this journey has been for Avery's family and assured them that I would say a prayer for their intentions. Then I asked Avery if there was anything that she wanted me to pray for. Slowly, Avery started to cry. I held her hand, hoping that my hand in hers told her, I'm here for whatever you're feeling. What do you most need? I asked. I need help for when I don't have hope. I said a prayer for Avery to feel loved and worthy always and to be helped when she can't touch hope on her own. Avery told me that she had felt so guilty for feeling this way. Avery's wife and dad hugged her. We had no idea, they said. We want to know more. By having the courage to be honest, Avery was offered balm for the wound and given company where she was most hurting. I was asked to see an elderly patient that I'll call Benny. His nurse told me that Benny couldn't stop crying after having to have an amputation. I asked Benny what he was feeling. "I'm embarrassed," he said, "by what my body looks like. But mostly, I'm embarrassed because I think my surgeon thinks I'm crazy." I asked Benny to say more. Benny went on to tell me that he had asked his doctor if he could have his arm after it was amputated. "I just wanted to give it a funeral," Benny said, "and now I bet you think I'm crazy too." "Not at all," I said. "Your reaction is actually a very normal response to a not normal situation." I told Benny that many of my patients who had had amputations or transplants had the exact same longing. Now that I could see what was most upsetting and scaring Benny, I could use my experience and knowledge and my love to tend to the pain at its source. And Benny could risk what I might think to be able to see what I actually thought. I told Benny I thought he was wise, that of course he would want to honor the arm that had always been with him. I knew that because of health code things, Benny could never have his actual arm. But I found some artificial flowers and asked Benny if a neighbor could bring in an old t-shirt. Together, we wrapped the shirt around the flower stems. We wrote a blessing, and I suggested that he might use the blessing to tuck the flowers somewhere important or to bury them. I received a card from Benny a while later telling me about the service that he had for his arm and how he likes to visit the grave he made when he wants to remember. Benny's willingness to be honest, even when he was embarrassed, helped me to be able to meet him where the pain was, and his vulnerability allowed for healing. Are there wounds that you mask for fear of what might happen if you are exposed? Are there ways you could make it easier for another to expose their wounds? When we are so afraid of rejection or hurt that we don't connect with each other, we don't love fully, and we all deserve the fullness of love. Vulnerability can help with this. Brené Brown teaches that for connection to happen, we have to allow ourselves to be seen fully, which means we have to let go of who we think we should be who we are. I regularly lead workshops to train new doctors and nurses in vulnerability. New staff ask, how do we protect ourselves? How do we stay professional? Because I work on intensive care units, we are often caring for people who are not going to get better. We open ourselves up even though we can lose them and it will hurt. And then we show up exposed for the full range of emotions, which I argue is very professional. I recently joined my colleagues in caring for a young patient that I'll call Isabel. The day after her admission, her doctor gently, tearfully told her girlfriend that he didn't think she would survive the hospitalization. And he was right. Isabel died after months of us coming to love her and her family. Her family asked me to do her funeral. I drove a few hours to do the service, spending the drive thinking about how unfair this death was, how devastating it was, how devastated her family was. I arrived and joined the receiving line, binder in hand. Suddenly, I felt someone hug me, their tears hitting my shoulder. I turned to see one of my nursing colleagues with two other nurses behind her, all crying. My heart broke open. Their tears were the holy water. These nurses, younger than me, had driven hours on their day off to show their sadness and to bear witness to Isabel's family's pain. I wasn't the only one who knew that their tears were holy. I watched how moved Isabel's girlfriend and brothers and cousins were to see them showing up, feelings fully exposed. A lot of holy moments happen in hospitals, but they happen way beyond the hospitals as well. A couple weeks ago, I went with a friend to see the musical Rent. Rent moves me every time. More than entertainment to escape into, it is a story that touches on some of my deepest longings and losses and loves. It isn't an easy story, but it is an important one. Usually the song that takes strongest hold on my heart is the reprise version of I'll Cover You, which is sung at a funeral. As the character Collins begins to sing this ballad, I closed my eyes and felt the tears start to fall. But then I heard other sniffles, many of them. My friend next to me was crying. The group in front of me was crying. The elderly couple behind me cried, pausing to offer me a tissue. The ballad washed over my heart, but the shower of collective tears became the warm blanket. Especially now, when our world can feel so dominated by hate. Being connected to so many strangers, all moved to tears, all willing to let them fall. This was my miracle. Being bathed in collective vulnerability was the best way to feel alive. When I was in that job interview all those years ago, I talked about how horrible it felt to desperately need help. I think often of the people who showed up to help me and love me when I didn't much love myself. The people who saw me at my worst and gave me their best. They showed me a dimension of love that I never could have felt without being vulnerable. My friends, who are you really? If you let who you think you should be fall away, who is left? What might you gain by letting the world really see you? Who might you gain? When we see the iron fist and the all-powerful revered as the best, can we remember the depth of humanity that can only be reached by vulnerability? The wounds, the balm, the mistakes, the growth, the fear, the love. I believe that this can save us. This can help us save each other. To borrow the famous lines from the musical Rent, I've longed to discover something as true as this is. If you're cold and you're lonely, I'll cover you. You've got one nickel only, I'll cover you. May we cover each other. May we discover each other as we really are, and may we love each other fully. May lights guide each of us home. May we risk vulnerability for growth. May we risk vulnerability for love. I love you. Our benediction comes from Hafiz. Admit something. Everyone you see, you say to them, love me. Of course, you do not do this out loud. Otherwise, someone would call the cops. Still though, think about this great pull in us to connect. Why not become the one who lives with a full moon in each eye that is always saying with that sweet moon language what every other eye in this world is dying to hear? May you live with full moons in your eyes, having the courage to be vulnerable enough to love and be loved. Let us keep this faith, beloveds, and pass it on.
The service begins when the service ends.
Bless your hearts. We love you. Amen.
Where you go, I will go, beloved. Where you go, I will go.
We are located at the corner of Arlington and Boylston Streets, across from the Public Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.